Hello, I'm Robert Desay with you on Lingua Franca, talking today about Latin in the modern world with Professor Peter Davis of the School of History and Classics at the University of Tasmania. Along with millions of others, I've been enjoying those ancient Roman detective novels of Stephen Saylor, and what strikes me as I read is how completely unrelated the Latin I learned at school was to the everyday conversations in Saylor's books. The greetings, small talk about the weather, shopping, table talk, even pillow talk. And I wondered if Latin is taught differently these days. A few weeks ago on Lingua Franca, Nick Hudson talked about how learning Latin in England half a century ago was the key to success. In the Foreign Office, the BBC, journalism, even business. Well, education nowadays is geared rather differently, isn't it? So I asked Peter Davis what he thought learning Latin was the key to these days.
Well, I think I would say that nowadays Latin is the key to a very significant part of our culture. That Latin was, for about 1700 years, the common language of Western Europe. So its significance relates not simply to the period of the Roman Empire, but to the Middle Ages and onward through the Renaissance and up to about 1700, 1800. For me personally, it's the key to an extraordinarily rich literature, which engages with issues which I think are still significant.
But you can read that literature in very fine translations nowadays, can't you?
Yes, there are certainly plenty of fine translations around, and we do a lot of teaching in translation, and it's actually a very important activity, and you can go a long way with translations. But I also think that in the end that it is essential that there be people who can read these works in the original. One reason, I guess, is so that there continue to be translations. Another reason is that there's only a certain distance you can go with appreciating and understanding the literature. And I'm thinking of things like aspects of the language that are peculiar to that language. So, for example, the way in which Roman writers put words on the page, I think, is something that I've paid particular attention to more recently. And, for example, the way in which a writer like Virgil will begin a line with an adjective and conclude it with the noun that agrees with it, which makes for a particularly strong kind of line. Or the way in which a writer like Virgil or Ovid will put, in fact, two adjectives at the beginning of the line, place the verb in the middle, and then have two nouns at the end, which creates quite extraordinary effect and very powerful line. But I guess another aspect of it is that there are certain key concepts which can't be followed with precision through a translation, that in the end you have to study the work in the original language.
Do you mean cultural concepts, cultural values?
Yes, cultural concepts, moral values, other kinds of values, those particular things. They are, of course, things that don't, in fact, translate quite so well.
You could say the same thing, of course, about learning Albanian or Chinese, couldn't you? You could say, by learning Albanian or Chinese, you're going to learn a different system of values, you're going to learn how a very different kind of language works, which is going to make you think about your own language differently. You could say all that, but what you couldn't say is that Albanian or Chinese have really informed our culture and made us who we are.
I think that's right. I mean, I think that's true. That for people with a Western European heritage, that Latin is absolutely central to the kind of people that we are.
Well, it's the same for Greek, surely. I mean, if someone were to ask you, which of the two should I choose to study, Latin or Greek, what would your answer be?
I think that's a very hard question to answer. I think it's actually not quite so true of Greek. I mean, the Roman Empire was largely Greek-speaking in the eastern part and Latin-speaking in the west. And certainly for Western Europe, Latin has been the language that people have studied most and the language that's been more important, whereas Greek has been very much a minority kind of accomplishment. Which language should people study? I think I find that very difficult to answer. Usually I give an answer in terms of practicalities rather than which language or literature is the better one.
Which Latin do you teach, by the way? From what era?
The Latin that we teach is classical Latin, and that means from something like 50 BC through to 150 AD, something like that.
Late Republic?
Late Republic, early Roman Empire. And my particular interest is in literature of the Augustan period, so that means from 31 BC to 14 AD.
And we call it classical Latin. Why?
We call it classical because it's become the most prestigious period of the language. I mean, I wouldn't want to say that it's actually the best because there's an awful lot of Latin literature written after that period, going right through to 17th, 18th century.
But we're talking here about Catullus.
We're talking about Catullus, Virgil, and Cicero and Virgil and Ovid and Seneca and Tacitus, Livy and so on. They're the authors that have the prestige, and they're the ones that we study.
More or less, I suppose, they actually spoke the way they wrote. I mean, I know they were writing literature and therefore it was a polished up form, but presumably they were using a language in their works which people used in, at least in public life and probably to some extent in private life. When did that language start to change more or less beyond recognition? When did the people in the streets of Rome start to speak a Latin that the sort of Latin you teach wouldn't help you to decipher?
I actually find it quite difficult to believe that ordinary Romans spoke Latin the way that Virgil writes. His way of writing is extraordinarily sophisticated. It's difficult to believe that, as I say, that ordinary Romans spoke in that way. And we actually have very little access to the way in which ordinary Romans spoke. The best way is really through the works of someone like Petronius, who's actually a very much an upper-class Roman, but writes a novel and in which he clearly tries to reproduce the speech of ordinary middle and lower class Romans.
People saying good morning and
that's right,
it's a bit
that's
muggy
right.
today.
And talking about food and talking about their mm-hmm. concerns about their children's education and mm-hmm. what we're going to have for dinner and, you know, let's go to the baths and that kind of thing.
What about playwrights?
Well, comic playwrights, as it happens in Latin, are writing well before the classical period. We certainly occasionally teach Plautus and Terence. But when it comes to the other playwrights in Latin are actually, there's Seneca, the writer of tragedies, and they again write in that more elevated kind of style. So, yes, we have access to popular speech to writers like Plautus and Terence, but again, their language is actually quite different from the classical Latin that we teach.
But to get back to my original question, do you think a Roman in the year 500 AD could have picked up a Catullan poem and understood it?
I think so. I think the answer to that is yes.
Despite all the changes, endings and all the...
That's right. I mean, it's difficult. I mean, I must confess I don't have particular expertise here, but clearly the language changes. And one thing that's noticeable, for example, is that the kind of vulgar words that we point to in classical literature and say, this is a common, this is a vulgar word, they're the words, in fact, that find their way into French and Italian and Spanish and so on. So there's certainly, I mean, there are different registers of Latin in the classical period. People write books about this kind of thing. But it's the ordinary speech that actually survives, not the hyper-sophisticated kind of language that Virgil and Ovid are using.
In the Romance languages of today.
Exactly so, mm. That's right.
It must be terribly difficult to encourage the modern generation of English speakers to tackle such a difficult language. I mean, morphologically difficult. Nouns have many endings. I mean, you know, the word for dog has, I suppose you'd have to say 12
endings.
Forms. Adjectives have 36, something like that.
That's
unlike
right.
English, where, you know, green is green, big is big. That's all you've got, really. And someone speaking Latin had to choose when they said something was green between 36 different forms. Well, these days, when people hardly know what an adjective is, it must be very hard to find a way to get people to learn such a complicated linguistic structure. How do you go about it? Presumably, you don't do what we did in my day, which was parrot drills.
We certainly don't do that. I'm not quite sure why we get so many students. I'm very pleased that we do, of course. I mean, we get roughly 36 students into an elementary Latin course in first year here in Hobart, and I think that's actually quite an impressive number. Some of those are coming straight out of school without any experience of Latin at all. Others are doing it because they've been doing courses in translation. We offer an ancient civilizations course, which is the course which obviously attracts the greatest number of students. And because people become enthusiastic about what we do, they decide that they will then study Latin. So that's a significant source of Latin students for us.
They're motivated, in other
They're
words.
They're motivated in... That's right.
But, I mean, do you have more modern methods than we had in my day of teaching?
Certainly we do. Certainly we do. Nowadays we use, and most people in Australia, in fact, use the same course. We use a course called Reading Latin, and the focus is very much on acquiring reading skills. And, of course, to do that, you do, in fact, need to learn all those paradigms of verbs and nouns, the omo, omas, omat stuff. It is important to be able to do that. But, as I say, we focus on reading skills. And in a way, it's even an advantage for us that Latin is no longer spoken, because we don't have to teach those kinds of skills, whereas our colleagues in modern languages have to do that.
The advantage with a language like Russian or Polish or Czech would be that the students hear these forms over and over again and more or less have to force themselves. I mean, they can't open their mouths unless they can use these forms, whereas your students not having to speak.
Yes, I guess that's right. Of course, there's a lot of speaking takes place in class, but it's mostly the teacher reading out the text. And we certainly encourage the students to read the text aloud as well, partly so that we have a shared pronunciation, but also so that they can pay attention to things like the quantity of the vowels and just become comfortable with the language. But yes, I guess you're right that having to speak and I guess having to engage in conversation is a good way of getting people to learn those forms.
The shared pronunciation comes from where? From Oxford?
I'm not quite sure where it comes from. The shared pronunciation is a reconstructed pronunciation, which I think came into teaching classics around the end of the 19th century. Before that, Latin, certainly in English-speaking countries, was pronounced just like English. And, of course, one thing that happened in English was, back, I think, in the 14th, 15th century, was the great vowel shift, so that the pronunciation was totally awful. And you see it, actually, in the way in which lawyers pronounce Latin today, which is particularly offensive.
But you're not pretending that if a Roman from 50 BC were to listen to you speak, that he would necessarily think, oh, yes, that's the way I speak.
Certainly I don't pretend that. I mean, we aim on the basis of the knowledge that we have to speak as accurately as we can, but certainly I wouldn't claim that Virgil would clap with delight when he heard me reading out his text.
What do you think, since your emphasis is on a passive understanding of the language, of this new fad for translating Elvis Presley songs into Latin, Finnish radio's Latin news? I think it's a weekly broadcast, all the sites on the internet which offer you translations of things like, you know, I'll have another gin and tonic. What do you think of this kind of attempt to make Latin relevant?
Well, I have to say that I think they're basically gimmicks. And I'm not sure that translating Elvis Presley songs into Latin is actually like to appeal to students of the age that we have, 18 to 21-year-olds. I think Elvis Presley is almost as much in the past as Virgil is.
So you don't really think that it helps vivify the language?
I don't think so, no.
You think it's better to go back into the world as it was then and try to hear the Latin that
was used? That's certainly what we try to do, is to give people some insight into Roman literature, Roman history, the kind of context which produced these works and these thoughts. That's certainly the way that we approach it.
There is a fascination with roots, isn't there, really, at the moment? I mean, you notice it in the literary magazines, and you notice it on television, for example. I mean, SBS is continually broadcasting programs about the ancient world in one form or another. We seem to suddenly want, very strongly, to find out why we are who we are.
It certainly seems to be true. I mean, and not just on the SBS, but also on the ABC, quite a lot of programs dealing with the past, certainly the classical past, on ancient Egypt, and also the less remote past, Napoleon and so on, 18th century. Yes, it certainly seems to be there, and we can only hope that it will encourage people to take an interest in the kinds of things that we do.
Peter Davis from the University of Tasmania. Jill Kitson will be back with you at this time next week on Lingua Franca. I'm Robert Desay. Vale, until next time.
Ciao, Robert, and thanks so much for your beautiful work over the past 4 weeks. Of course, the difference between Virgil and Elvis is that Elvis isn't really dead. You can hear Robert Desay's Lingua Franca all over again if you want to, just by going to abc.net.au/rn, click on Lingua Franca, and you can hear it on Audio On Demand. Now, coming up in an hour from now, that's 5 o'clock here on Radio National, we'll meet Seaman Dan. Now, he's a bit of a legend, this bloke. He's a pearl diver and singer from the Torres Strait, whose music is pretty joyful. It's a mixture of jazz, blues, reggae, old sea songs, and it's on the